The first time I encountered Women Who Run With the Wolves, I was struck by its raw power. This wasn't just another psychology book. It was a soul-stirring manifesto that has transformed millions of women's lives since its publication in 1992. Oprah Winfrey called it one of the most important books of our time, while Emma Watson included it in her feminist book club. The book spent 145 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list and has been translated into 37 languages, touching women across cultures and generations. Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes, Jungian analyst, post-trauma specialist, and cantadora, keeper of old stories, created something that transcends categorization, blending psychology, mythology, and spiritual wisdom into a work that continues to resonate deeply with readers seeking to reconnect with their authentic selves. Deep within every woman lives a powerful force filled with instinctual knowing, creative fire, and ageless memory. This is the Wild Woman, a psychological and spiritual entity that represents the instinctual nature of women. She is not reckless or out of control, as the modern use of wild might suggest, but rather natural, healthy, and whole living, with innate integrity and sharp, deeply connected senses. Throughout history, this wildish nature has been tamed, suppressed, and forgotten as women were thought to be good rather than powerful, to be silent rather than to speak their truth. Like endangered wolves that once roamed freely but now hide in the remaining wilderness, the wild woman archetype has been pushed to the margins of our psyches. Yet she remains. She is the voice that whispers when something feels wrong. She is the sudden insight that cuts through confusion. She is the fierce protector who knows when to say no. She is the passionate creator who brings new life into being. When women lose connection to this wildish nature, they become tired, flat, anxious, and weak. Their personalities become meager, spectral versions of what they could be. But when reconnected to Wild Woman, they operate from a place of instinctual knowing. They see not just with their physical eyes, but with intuition. They speak with authentic voice, they create with natural rhythm, and they love with full hearts. The Wild Woman is known by many names across cultures: La Loba, Wolf Woman; La Mariposa, Butterfly Woman; La Que Sabe, the one who knows. She appears in dreams and myths as the Wild Goddess, the Forest Queen, the Ancient One. She is the female soul itself, the source of feminine knowing that gives women their fierceness, creativity, passion, and depth. To reclaim our connection to the Wild Woman, we must engage in what Estes calls psychic archaeology, digging through the layers of domestication and socialization to find the buried bones of our wild nature. Like La Loba, the wolf woman who collects bones in the desert and sings over them until they flesh out into a living wolf, we must gather the forgotten aspects of ourselves and breathe life back into them. This work begins by recognizing the symptoms of a disconnected wild nature: chronic exhaustion, feeling muzzled, depression, confusion, feeling powerless, unable to follow natural rhythms. These aren't just personal problems, they're signs that the wild feminine has been exiled from our lives. The journey back to wildness isn't always comfortable. It requires facing parts of ourselves that may have been rejected or denied. It means acknowledging our anger, our desires, our intuitive knowing that may contradict what we've been taught. It means standing in our power even when others find it threatening. Through stories, dreams, and creative expression, we begin to recover the instinctual self. We learn to trust our inner knowing again. We rediscover our natural cycles of creativity, rest, passion, and solitude. We stop forcing ourselves into unnatural shapes to please others and instead honor the unique contours of our wild souls. This isn't a romanticized return to some primitive state. It's about integrating our deepest nature with our contemporary lives. The Wild Woman doesn't reject civilization, she brings vitality to it. She doesn't abandon responsibility, she approaches it with fierce love and protection for what matters most. One of the most dangerous threats to a woman's wild nature is what Estes calls the natural predator of the psyche. This isn't just an external force, but an internal complex that seeks to destroy creativity, intuition, and passion. In fairy tales, this predator appears as characters like Bluebeard figures, who initially seem charming, but ultimately seek to kill a woman's most vibrant self. The predator operates through various mechanisms: critical inner voices that tell us our work isn't good enough, cultural messages that demand we stay small, relationships that drain rather than nourish our creative energy. It thrives on naivete, the innocent belief that if we're just nice enough, we'll be safe and loved. Women often encounter this predator when they begin to awaken to their wild nature. Just as they start to create, to speak out, to follow their instincts, the predator appears with messages of doubt, fear, and shame. "Who do you think you are?" it whispers. "You're not talented enough, smart enough, good enough." To defeat this predator, we must first recognize it. We must learn to distinguish between our authentic inner voice and the voice of the predator. We must see how we've been conditioned to doubt ourselves, to give away our power, to silence our knowing. The tale of Bluebeard teaches us how to overcome this predator through curiosity, using the key to open the forbidden door, through seeing clearly, witnessing the truth of what has been destroyed, through calling for help, summoning our inner resources, and through decisive action, cutting off the predator's power. When we confront the predator, we reclaim our right to create, to speak, to know, and to live from our wild center. We stop apologizing for our power and instead use it in service of our authentic lives. At the heart of the wild feminine lies intuition, that immediate knowing that comes not from rational thought, but from a deeper place of wisdom. Estes describes intuition as a treasure of women's psyche, a divining instrument that helps us see with uncanny interior vision. The tale of Vasilisa illustrates how intuition guides us through life's challenges. Given a doll by her dying mother, Vasilisa learns to feed and listen to this small guide, a symbol of her intuitive nature. When sent on a dangerous errand to get fire from the fearsome witch Baba Yaga, the doll helps Vasilisa discern which tasks to accept and which to refuse, ultimately saving her life. Like Vasilisa's doll, our intuition speaks in a small, clear voice that tells us what is right for us. It's not emotional reactivity or wishful thinking, but a deep knowing that emerges from our connection to the wild feminine. It manifests as physical sensations, sudden insights, persistent thoughts, or dreams that point us toward or away from certain paths. Many women have been taught to distrust this voice, to defer to external authorities rather than their own knowing. We're told we're too emotional, overthinking, or making things up when we express intuitive concerns. Over time, this dismissal causes intuition to atrophy like an unused muscle. To reclaim intuition, we must feed it by listening to it, by acting on its guidance, by respecting its messages even when they contradict conventional wisdom. We must create quiet space to hear its whispers beneath the noise of daily life. We must honor it as the voice of our wild nature speaking through us. When fully developed, intuition becomes a reliable inner compass that helps us navigate relationships, work, creativity, and life's major decisions. It helps us recognize predatory people and situations before they harm us. It guides us toward what will nourish our souls and away from what will deplete us. It connects us to the ancient feminine wisdom that knows how to survive and thrive in all conditions. Women exist in two worlds simultaneously: the civilized world of society and relationships, and the wild world of instinct and soul. Rather than choosing between these realms, the healthy woman learns to integrate them, moving fluidly between her two women who are one. The African-American folktale of Manamwe illustrates this dual nature. A man who wishes to marry twin sisters must first learn their secret names. Only when he understands both aspects of feminine nature, both the outer, visible self, and the inner, mysterious self, can he truly claim them as his own. This integration isn't about maintaining a split personality, but about honoring the different aspects of our nature. The civilized self helps us function in society, maintain relationships, and meet our responsibilities. The wild self ensures we remain connected to our creativity, intuition, and authentic desires. Problems arise when women try to live exclusively in one realm or the other. Those who reject their wild nature become rigid, depleted, and disconnected from their power and joy. Those who reject their civilized nature may struggle to maintain the relationships and structures that also nourish life. The healthy woman recognizes that she needs both aspects of herself. She creates a life that honors her wild cycles of creativity and rest while fulfilling her chosen commitments. She speaks her truth while maintaining connections. She follows conventions when they serve her and breaks them when they don't. This integration requires ongoing attention and adjustment. It means creating boundaries that protect our wild nature while engaging meaningfully with the world. It means developing what Estes calls the medial woman, the aspect of ourselves that stands between the rational world and the mystical unconscious, translating between these realms. One of the most profound teachings of the wild woman archetype is the understanding of the life, death, life nature. The natural cycle where endings make way for new beginnings, where death nourishes rebirth. In modern culture, we've separated death from life, seeing it only as a final ending rather than part of a continuous cycle of renewal. The Inuit tale of Skeleton Woman reveals how this cycle operates in love relationships. When a fisherman accidentally catches a skeleton woman in his net, he must overcome his fear of her death aspect before they can create a life together. By untangling her bones, giving her his tears to drink, and allowing her to use his heart as a drum, he participates in her resurrection. Their subsequent union is good and lasting because it incorporates both life and death. This pattern extends beyond romantic relationships to all creative endeavors. Every creative project has periods of flow and stagnation, expansion and contraction. Every passion has moments of intensity and quietude. Every aspect of life, work, relationships, creative pursuits, follows this rhythm of birth, death, and rebirth. Women who understand this cycle don't panic when something in their lives appears to be dying. They recognize it as part of a natural process that will eventually lead to new growth. They don't cling desperately to relationships, projects, or identities that have completed their natural cycle. Instead, they honor what is ending while remaining open to what will be born. This understanding brings tremendous resilience. Rather than being devastated by endings, women connected to their wild nature see them as necessary transitions. They know that what appears to be a death often contains the seeds of something new and potentially more aligned with their deepest selves. The life-death-life nature teaches us to trust the process of transformation, even when it's uncomfortable or painful. It reminds us that nothing valuable is truly lost. It simply changes form, becoming part of the compost that nourishes new life. For many women, especially those with strong wild natures, the experience of feeling like an outsider begins early. Like the ugly duckling in Hans Christian Andersen's tale, they sense they're different from those around them, unable to conform to expectations that feel unnatural to their essential being. This exile isn't their fault. It stems from being born into families or communities that cannot recognize or nurture their true nature. Parents with rigid expectations, cultural environments that devalue feminine strength, or educational systems that reward conformity over creativity can all contribute to this sense of alienation. The journey toward healing begins with recognizing that the problem isn't your wild nature, but the mismatch between that nature and your surroundings. The ugly duckling wasn't defective. He was simply a swan born into a duck's nest. His suffering came not from being flawed, but from trying to be something he wasn't. True healing comes from finding your authentic pack, those who recognize and celebrate your true nature. These might not be your blood relatives or childhood friends. They might be mentors, colleagues, or friends who share your values and understand your essence. They are the ones who see your differences not as flaws, but as gifts. This journey requires endurance and faith. Like the ugly duckling who survived a harsh winter before finding his swan family, you may need to weather difficult periods of isolation. You may encounter bad company, those who seem to offer belonging but actually reinforce your outsider status. You may freeze emotionally, becoming cold to protect yourself from further rejection. But if you persist in your journey, maintaining connection to your wild nature even when it's difficult, you will eventually find where you belong. You'll recognize your true kin by the ease you feel in their presence, by their ability to see and appreciate your gifts, by the way they make room for all of who you are. Our bodies are not just physical forms, but sensing instruments that connect us to the world and to our wild nature. Yet modern culture has alienated women from their bodies through impossible beauty standards, objectification, and the devaluation of natural physical processes. The wild woman knows that a body's true purpose isn't to be decorative, but to be alive, to sense, feel, create, and connect. A healthy woman's relationship with her body isn't about achieving some culturally defined ideal, but about inhabiting her physical self fully and joyfully. This means rejecting the tiny-hearted messages that tell women their bodies are never good enough. It means recognizing that diverse body types reflect our varied ancestral heritage rather than personal failure. It means understanding that the body's natural changes through aging are not flaws to be corrected, but transformations to be honored. The story of Butterfly Woman illustrates this wild embodiment. When an old, substantial woman with gray hair reaching the ground performs the butterfly dance, her movements embody transformation and fertility. Her body represents not what culture says a woman should be, but what the wild feminine actually is: powerful, generative, and connected to Earth's rhythms. Reclaiming the joyous body means recognizing its wisdom. Our bodies speak to us through sensation, alerting us to danger, drawing us toward pleasure, telling us when to rest and when to act. When we listen to these messages rather than overriding them with cultural shoulds, we reconnect with our instinctual knowing. This embodied wisdom extends to sexuality as well. The wild feminine includes what Estes calls the dirty goddesses, aspects of female sexuality that are earthy, humorous, and powerful. These aren't the sanitized versions of sexuality presented in mainstream culture, but the raw, life-affirming expressions of feminine desire and pleasure. Creativity flows from the wild feminine like water from an underground river. This creative force isn't limited to artistic expression, but includes all forms of making, from cooking to gardening, from raising children to building organizations, from writing poetry to solving problems in unique ways. When this creative river becomes polluted or blocked, a woman feels its loss throughout her being. She becomes depleted, confused, and disconnected from her source of vitality. The tale of La Llorona, the weeping woman who searches endlessly for her dead children in a polluted river, illustrates what happens when creative energy is poisoned. Many forces threaten this creative flow: external demands that leave no time for creative work, internal critics that question the value of our efforts, cultural messages that dismiss women's creative contributions, all can contaminate the river of creativity. Sometimes the pollution comes from within, when we neglect our creative needs or betray our artistic vision for external approval. To protect our creative fire, we must first recognize its sacred importance in our lives. This isn't a luxury or a hobby, but an essential aspect of our wild nature. When we honor our creativity as vital to our well-being, we begin to make different choices about how we spend our time and energy. We must also learn to identify and remove the contaminants in our creative river. This means setting boundaries around our creative time and space, silencing the inner critic that undermines our efforts, and surrounding ourselves with people who support rather than diminish our creative expression. Perhaps most importantly, we need to maintain regular connection with our creative source through daily practice. Even small creative acts, writing a paragraph, sketching for 10 minutes, improvising a new recipe, keep the river flowing. When we lose focus or energy, we can restore it not through force, but through patience, returning to the wild center where creativity originates. The wild feminine includes not just nurturing aspects, but fierce ones as well. Healthy anger, the ability to recognize violations and respond appropriately, is an essential part of a woman's instinctual nature. Yet many women have been taught that anger is unfeminine, unspiritual, or dangerous. The Japanese folktale of the Crescent Moon Bear teaches how to transform raw rage into constructive power. A woman seeking to heal her relationship must climb a mountain to obtain a hair from the throat of a fearsome bear. Through patience and respect, she eventually gains the bear's trust enough to receive the hair. When she returns triumphantly to the healer, the old woman burns the hard-won hair, explaining that the true medicine wasn't the hair itself, but the process of obtaining it, the same careful approach the woman must now take with her husband. This story reveals that rage isn't something to be hastily discarded, but a teacher that carries important messages about our boundaries and needs. When approached with consciousness, anger can be transformed from a destructive force into a source of clarity and strength. The journey of transformation includes several stages: seeking wise counsel, venturing into unfamiliar emotional territory, recognizing illusions about our situation, putting obsessive thoughts to rest, and connecting with our compassionate self. Through this process, rage becomes not a state we're stuck in, but a teacher we learn from. Sometimes this transformation leads to forgiveness, not as a single act, but as a process with multiple stages: foregoing, taking a break from thinking about the hurt, forbearing, abstaining from punishment, forgetting, refusing to dwell, and finally forgiving, abandoning the debt. This isn't about excusing harmful behavior, but about freeing ourselves from the burden of sustained rage. In rare cases, righteous rage becomes necessary when serious offenses against soul or spirit occur and all reasonable avenues for change have failed. Women connected to their wild nature recognize these moments and respond with appropriate force, their timing right as rain. Every woman needs regular returns to her soul home, the place where she reconnects with her wild nature and replenishes her psychic energy. Like the seal woman in the tale Sealskin Soulskin, who must periodically return to the sea to maintain her vitality, women need cycles of retreat and engagement to remain whole. Modern life often disrupts these natural rhythms, keeping women constantly on call for others' needs without time to attend to their own. The result is a gradual drying out, a loss of moisture, flexibility, and life force that leaves women feeling depleted and disconnected from their source. The seal woman's pelt represents this connection to wild nature. When stolen, she becomes trapped in a life that slowly drains her vitality. Many women have similarly lost their pelts through poor bargains, surrendering creative time for others' approval, abandoning dreams for security, or silencing their voices to maintain relationships. Reclaiming the wild self requires recognizing when we've stayed too long in situations that deplete us. The signs are clear: irritability, fatigue, loss of perspective, diminished creativity, and a sense of being trapped. These aren't character flaws, but messages from our wild nature that it's time to return home. This return doesn't necessarily require physical retreat, though that can be helpful. It might mean carving out solitude within daily life, engaging in creative work that feeds the soul, spending time in nature, or connecting with others who honor our wild selves. The specific form matters less than the quality of attention, the deliberate turning toward what nourishes rather than depletes. When we honor these cycles, moving between engagement and retreat, between giving and receiving, between doing and being, we maintain our connection to the wild feminine. We become like the medial woman, who can move between worlds, drawing wisdom from the depths and bringing it into conscious life. The tale of the Handless Maiden reveals the initiatory journey that many women must undertake to reclaim their wild power. When a miller unwittingly trades his daughter to the devil, she loses her hands, her ability to grasp life on her own terms. Her subsequent journey through forest and underworld represents the stages of feminine initiation. This initiation isn't a single event, but a series of descents and returns, each bringing greater strength and wisdom. The maiden moves through distinct phases: the bargain without knowing, where she's traded away without her consent; dismemberment, losing her hands; wandering, leaving home to find her way; finding love in the underworld, marriage to the king; harrowing of the soul, fleeing with her child when threatened; the realm of the wild woman, 7 years in the forest where her hands regrow; and finally, the wild bride and bridegroom, reunion with her transformed husband. These stages mirror women's psychological development as they move from innocence through loss to eventual wholeness. The initial loss, whether of confidence, creativity, voice, or power, initiates a journey that ultimately leads to greater strength than would have been possible without the descent. The handless maiden's silver hands, given by the king, represent an intermediate stage, helpful but artificial supports that must eventually be replaced by her own regrown natural hands. Similarly, women may initially rely on external validation or borrowed confidence before developing their authentic power. The 7 years in the forest, where her hands gradually regenerate, represent the deep inner work that cannot be rushed. In this sacred space, away from the demands and expectations of others, a woman reconnects with her wild nature and allows her natural abilities to return. This initiatory journey teaches that loss isn't the end, but the beginning of transformation. By descending into the underworld of their psyches, facing their wounds, and reconnecting with the wild woman who dwells there, women emerge with a power that can never again be taken from them. The journey to reclaim our wild feminine nature isn't about rejecting civilization or responsibilities, but about living authentically within them. It's about bringing the wisdom, creativity, and power of the wild woman into our everyday lives, our relationships, work, creative endeavors, and communities. This integration requires ongoing attention and choice. It means recognizing when we've strayed too far from our wild nature and taking steps to reconnect. It means setting boundaries that protect our essential selves while remaining engaged with the world. It means creating lives that honor both our responsibilities to others and our responsibility to our own souls. The wolf provides a model for this balanced living. Wolves maintain strong social bonds while preserving their wild instincts. They know when to run with the pack and when to seek solitude. They protect their territory and their young while adapting to changing conditions. They communicate clearly, play joyfully, and rest deeply. Estes offers general wolf rules for life that capture this wild wisdom: eat, rest, rove in between, render loyalty, love the children, cavil in moonlight, tune your ears, attend to the bones, make love, howl often. Living wild doesn't mean abandoning civilization, but transforming it from within. When women reclaim their wild nature, they bring its vitality, creativity, and wisdom into all aspects of life. They raise children who respect their own instinctual knowing. They create art that speaks truth. They build relationships based on authenticity rather than performance. They engage in work that matters. This is how the wild feminine changes the world. Not through rejection of society, but through infusion of wildness into its structures. One woman at a time, reclaiming her wild nature, creates ripples that gradually transform the culture around her. The journey is both personal and collective. As individual women reconnect with their wild nature, they find each other, forming new packs that support and celebrate this wildness. Together, they create what Estes calls Mundo de la Madre, a psychic mother world where the wild feminine is honored and expressed in all its forms. The wolf's eyelash, the gift of clear seeing, allows us to recognize both the truth of our current condition and the possibility of something different. It shows us where we've been captured and where freedom lies. It reveals the path back to our wild nature, one step at a time, through forest and field, under starlight and sunlight, alone and together, howling our truth to the waiting world.